First, I will light the chalice.
I want to light the chalice in memory of Dov Comptroller, who was Secretary General of the United Nations from 1953 until 1961. He was a remarkable person, even though one can be critical of a few things that he did. But he had a passionate moral sense, unshakable integrity, and a great concern to combat violence, injustice, and prejudice with humanity and reason.
The owner of a gray VW has left their parking lights on. License tag 3608 says Mechie, something like that. Gray VW. Valve. Got the parking lights on.
Oh.
We will now sing Psalm 71.
And each bringing their own point of view on it, and then the United Nations tries to put it all together and come up with a common, understandable solution. And so what we're going to do is this singing game, and it's a guessing game, so I'm going to have to get one volunteer to be the United Nations to solve the puzzle. But first we'll I'll explain how it works. It's kind of the singing game. And we, as a group, will pick a word that has at least three syllables in it. And for those of you who don't know what a syllable is, it's the little part of a word. So strawberry would have three syllables, strawberry. Or Mary has two syllables, Mary. You know, the little sounds in the word is a syllable. So the group is going to have a word that has three or four or five syllables in it, and then we'll be divided into that many parts, and each part will sing the particular syllable, and we'll all be singing all at the same time, and the person who's playing the United Nations is going to have to listen to each of these syllables and try to put the word together and figure out what everybody's saying, okay? So we'll just do a little illustration right now. Let's take the word from the song, wonderful, okay? So let's say this part here will sing one, okay, for the first syllable, and this part here will sing der for the second syllable, and this part will sing full for the last syllable. And we'll all sing it to the tune of row, row, row your boat, okay? So we each sing, each group will sing their particular syllable to that tune, okay? One syllable the whole way through, like one, 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 and like that. All right? All right, so when I say three, we'll start and we'll just hear what it sounds like. All right, one, two, three. That's going to be hard. We tried this last night with just individual singing syllable, and it was a lot easier. Okay, I need a bomb. What's that?
Do it as a round, and we'll hear the word.
Right. Oh, yeah. Well, if the person can't guess it, maybe we'll go to that second step. Okay, I need a volunteer who would be the United Nations willing to put all these pieces of the puzzle together and come up with a solution. We'll help you. We won't make it too hard.
Are you being volunteered, Malcolm?
No.
Maya Clay.
Working together?
Yeah. Sure, sure. Team.
Okay. How about a young person to work with Malcolm? And it can be a team.
The one sitting next to me, I need a little more room.
Do you want to be the helper?
How about Robbie?
Greg, are you kind of raising your arm by me? Are you willing to be the adult?
I guess I am.
Yeah, thank you. All right, we need, is this a volunteer over here to help? I think
sure.
It is, isn't
yeah.
it?
Yeah.
Yes.
We
need a young person.
Will you come and help me?
No.
Or Chinoa? Would you want to volunteer? Any volunteers? You have to leave the room while we get our system worked out here.
In the foyer out there, way out there.
All right. All right. Does anyone have a word that they would like to suggest, especially a word maybe applicable to the United Nations?
Yes. Sisterhood. We just sang about that.
All right.
Omission of any sisters.
All right. In fact, my daughter asked, "What about the sisters?" All right. All right. So.
Jeff, well, let's have another. Yeah. The follow up.
Yeah.
No, I mean.
More than one word. Okay, so you think it would be easy enough to. Okay. What's a second word that someone would like to suggest also?
Ethiopian extension.
Universal.
Okay, I think universal. All right, so for the first word, you'll sing the first syllable, sis.
And what is the first word?
This is your choice. Okay, so sis. And again, down here.
Oh, they used a term.
And it helps if you enunciate.
Do we have a second word?
Oh, okay. All right, so the second one.
Uni.
You. I think it's
you.
Yeah, let's try four. So we'll split you down, and you would be you. Me.
No.
Which one are we doing
first?
Must fail.
All right.
How many syllables?
The first word is 3 syllables. Okay.
First word.
We had 2. We thought you'd be so good at it that we decide on 2 words. So the first word. All right. So everybody, to same syllable, to row, row, row your boat. All right. 1, 2, 3. One more time.
That's
what? Can you hear each of those?
No.
Let's have it group by group. We'd like to sing the song that we've been singing for a while now for the kids and teachers to go downstairs. Mike Briggs, who, as you know, is a liar, is going to tell us something about... something about the Organization of the United Nations.
I'm older than the United Nations, I hate to say that. It came into being on October 24th, 1945. There were 51 nations that founded the United Nations, basically the people on the winning side in World War II, wanting to make sure, if they could, that World Wars wouldn't happen again. As they say in a booklet which I have here, The idea and commitment for the UN grew out of these nations' fervent desire to save future generations from the scourge of war. There was a charter which they adopted for the United Nations. We'll be talking about that today, whether the how many teeth the charter has in it. To maintain international peace and security, to develop friendly relations among nations, to cooperate internationally in solving international economic, social, cultural, and humanitarian problems, and in promoting respect for human rights and fundamental freedoms, and to be a center for harmonizing the actions of nations in attaining these common ends. The United Nations itself, the organization, has six main bodies: the General Assembly, which is the grouping of all member nations, the Security Council, which has primary responsibility for maintaining international peace and security, with 15 members, five of whom are the permanent members. Basically, they're the big powers on the Allied side in World War II, the US, the USSR, the United Kingdom, France, and China. These governments, these nations, have representation on the Security Council permanently, and a negative vote from any one of them can block action by the Security Council. The other members are elected by the General Assembly for 2-year terms. That's two already: the General Assembly, the Security Council. There is a Secretariat, which is the civil service and the administrative arm of all the main UN bodies, headed by a Secretary General, who serves for a 5-year renewable term. And Dag Hammarskjöld, whom Pat lit the chalice for today, was the second Secretary General of the United Nations. We're now on the fifth since 1945, so you can see that even though they have a 5-year term, it is renewable, obviously, not only in theory, but in practice. There is an Economic and Social Council coordinating the social, economic, cultural, and humanitarian work of the UN Commission, at regional commissions and committees, expert bodies. There is a Trusteeship Council, which has been going out of business steadily. That was its purpose, to administer parts of the world that did not have governments of their own at the end of World War II, but they were placed under the Trusteeship Council to get ready for independence. And many of those territories have now achieved independence. Finally, there is the International Court of Justice with 15 judges elected for 9-year terms by the General Assembly on the recommendation of the Security Council. Aside from that, I'm not going to read them all. There are a multiplicity of specialized agencies, some of which predate the United Nations by many years, such as the Universal Postal Union, which was founded more than 100 years ago, dealing with specialized areas of international cooperation, setting standards. There's an World Meteorological Organization, an International Civil Aviation Organization, obvious purposes, food and agriculture, world health, and the list goes on. And at that point, any questions? On history, is the Red Cross? No, the Red Cross is not. UNICEF is a specialized agency of the United Nations, UNESCO.
The Red Cross is a non-governmental organization.
Yeah. Thank you.
Is the World Court the same as the International?
International Court of Justice, yeah. It's sometimes called the World Court. Just on history and structure. I'm going to turn it over to Pat then.
Is some of that left over from the League of Nations? I mean, did they assume some of
some of the specialized agencies? The International Court of Justice goes back to to 1919. It's always sat at The Hague in Holland. And as I say, some of these specialized organizations, the International Labor Organization, Universal Postal Union, things like this, go back well before not only the UN, but before the League of Nations. I don't believe there was any carryover from the League to the...
I don't know. I think they wanted to improve upon the League.
Yeah.
There's a question.
Yeah.
Oh, I just wanted to comment that we visited the World Health Organization in Geneva. It was occupying buildings that had been part of the League of Nations.
Uh-huh.
So there is some carryover.
On the physical structure, yeah.
I would just like to point out that the League of Nations kind of died in ignominy by the end of the Second World War, because one of the main reasons was that the League of Nations decided in 1933 that Hitler's persecution of the Jews was an internal question and did not touch the jurisdiction of the League. And in 1935, the High Commissioner for German Refugees, an official of the League of Nations, resigned over this refusal to intercede. And he said, when domestic policies threaten the demoralization and exile of hundreds of thousands of human beings, considerations of diplomatic correctness must yield to those of common humanity. So that was the demise of the previous organization to the United Nations. And in fact, I am here as a radical. I'm going to ask some nasty questions and make some nasty comments, pointing, I think, up the fact that the United Nations is in grave danger of dying exactly the way the League of Nations did. So having said my piece now.
Thank you. We're still friends.
My best friends are
right. Well, we thought it would be most interesting if we did raise some of the serious criticisms of the United Nations. Norma has agreed to be the critic. Certainly, it is toothless in the sense that it cannot enforce any political decision. And it also has to respect the sovereignty of individual nations. I will never forget I'm old enough to have remembered listening on the radio to the formation of the United Nations in 1945. And the friends and I were just so thrilled at the idea that such an organization would be started and that it would have the potential for preserving peace. But both the United States and the USSR, perhaps not the only ones, but they were the most vociferous in insisting that the sovereignty of individual nations must be respected, which meant that no action could be taken when one of these five permanent members of the Security Council objected to it. Norma, what is the first criticism?
Well, let me just say that I too was alive when the United Nations was began. And I want to quote something, because at the time I thought that the concept was very stirring, and I just knew vaguely about the League of Nations, which had been in existence in my very early childhood. And I'm going to quote something that Winston Churchill said in 1936. He spoke of the spacious conception of the League of Nations. Here you can put in United Nations. He said, "You must not underrate the force which these ideals exert. One does not know how the seeds are planted by the winds of the centuries in the hearts of the working people." And I think maybe we all kind of hope for an international organization that might have, shall we say, the moral force of Amnesty International, which I think has taken on the mantle of what the United Nations could do, or possibly even the Pope, without some of his strange oddities of ideas, and ask, why is it still just potential and not realized? I mean, the list of things the United Nations has not done is really rather appalling as I look. And let me just mention some of the peacekeeping things that it has not done. In 1975, the Secretary General refused to appeal to the North Vietnamese authorities on behalf of the millions of refugees trapped in the terminal chaos of the Vietnam War. In 1968, it completely ignored the Czechs' appeals against, that is from Czechoslovakia's appeals against repression from the USSR. It virtually ignored the India-Pakistan hostilities of 1965. It has ignored the prolonged emergency in Bangladesh. It made no efforts during the Nigeria-Biafran war when 1 million people died and there were accusations of genocide. And it has really interceded not at all in the problems in Uganda, Burundi, Ethiopia, I mean the list is as long as your arm, or Cambodia. We have had genocide, we have had massacres, we have had hostilities, and the United Nations is more known for its absence of actual intervention or even standing up and saying, this is wrong, people are being killed. We, the United Nations, stand for internationalism, peaceful methods of settling conflicts. So let me ask you, Michael, why do you think this is so? He's had a little forewarning.
Politicians say, I'm very glad you asked that question. Then the politicians go on to answer a completely different question, of course, but I'm not going to do that. Let's first look at what the United Nations has been able to do in the way of peacekeeping. Let's center on that for the moment, and then I'll relate it to what Norma said. You do have a peacekeeping place right now in force in Cyprus, separating Cypriot Greeks from Cypriot Turks. There is a buffer force between Iraq and Iran, and it was through the auspices of the United Nations there that largely that conflict was brought to a halt. There is a force in Lebanon between the Israelis and what's going on to the north of the Israelis. There is a United Nations force there. There have been a number of United Nations forces. There was a UN force in the Suez, supervising the withdrawal by both Israel and Egypt of the military forces from the Suez. And admittedly, there have been conflicts where the United Nations hasn't been able to intervene. But it comes back to what Pat said. The United Nations itself, per se, cannot move. It takes a resolution in the General Assembly or the Security Council, I would assume for this purpose, without a veto from any of the five permanent members. The resolution has to pass, has to have political support from sovereign nations. Without that, you get no action on the part of the United Nations. It was deliberately set up that way. Whether good or bad, three of the places that Nora mentioned, Ethiopia, Burundi, Uganda, there was no international involvement there. These were not conflicts between one nation and another.
Nor was Nazism.
That's true. Its virtues are also its shortcomings in this sense, I think.
Yes, and there have been other achievements more recently on the part of the United Nations. I'd really like to tell you more about Dag Hammarskjöld's efforts in settling the Suez Canal crisis, but I'm not sure there's time for that. But he showed what an individual Secretary General could accomplish by working with the power of his office. And Egypt was very concerned that any peacekeeping force should not stay there without their permission. They felt it was a threat on their sovereignty, but he managed to work out what was called a good faith agreement with the Egyptians to permit the peacekeeping forces to stay there until they had accomplished their task. And they actually stayed there from 1956 until 19, 63 or 67, I'm not sure, when Egypt demanded that they leave, it was 67, because immediately the Arab-Israeli war began in the Sinai Peninsula when the forces were withdrawn. At that time, no one on the Security Council or in the General Assembly raised the question and asked the Secretary General, can't you do something to keep the forces there? They were, obviously, the Egyptians wanted them out, and no one said we still need them there. And so U Thant, the Burmese Secretary General, felt he had to go along with the wishes of the country. But so in one sense, it is toothless. On the other hand, quite a few steps forward have been accomplished. And there are two very active groups in this country that are working for reform in the United Nations. In fact, there are three. There's the Center for War and Peace Studies that have developed a proposal for a new method of voting that would be binding. It's called the Binding Triad, and there are a few flyers over there on the table in case you're interested in it. But it's rather simple. It proposes that there be three votes taken on every issue that would tend to equalize the power of these many, many nations. There are a total of 163 countries that are now members of the UN, and only five have the power of veto. But of course, many of these 163 are small, poor African nations. And you can compare the island of Seychelles, which is north of Madagascar, which has 62,000 inhabitants. Their vote is equal to that of the United States or of the Soviet Union or of China, which is pretty unreasonable, yes. So the proposal is that, excuse me, that three votes be taken, one the usual way, count, and two-thirds have to vote in favor of any action. Another vote be weighted according to the population of the countries voting, so that the 62,000 populated country would have only a fraction of the power in its vote as the countries with millions of inhabitants. And a third vote would be taken depending on the financial contribution of each country, which in a sense you might immediately think, oh, if they weight population, China and India would have more votes than the U.S., but their financial contribution is so much less than that of the U.S. that this, again, would tend to even it out. And they've made many studies of the votes to show what the outcome would have been. But this, the members of the UN would have to agree that such votes would be binding. And of course, that, again, is an issue. I don't think we're going to see that tomorrow, but it does seem to be a hopeful sign. Then there is the United Nations Association in this country and in other countries. In fact, delegates from this country met with a similar representatives of a similar organization in the Soviet Union within the past year to talk about mutual cooperation. The United Nations Association has a proposal for reforming the UN, and there also are flyers over on the table if you're interested in the details. They do make sense, I think. And then the United States Congress legalized a commission to study the United Nations, however, they have not actually appropriated funds for this, and only 9 of the 15 members have been appointed. But this, too, I think, is a hopeful sign.
I'm not so sure it's hopeful. I think it's verbiage, like talking religion on Sundays. and not actually doing anything about it. I would like to point out that you remember we had a guy called Kurt Waldheim, who was Secretary General of the United Nations, and who it proved afterwards had in fact been involved in atrocities in Yugoslavia on the side of the Nazis in the Second World War. And it's extraordinarily strange that nobody, but nobody, pointed this out while he was on the process of consideration for Secretary General, or while he was actually Secretary General. And in fact, I found something. The time that he was being considered for this post was in 1971. And he was elected, according to my source and Joseph Kraft, who was a then reporter, because he was known to be, quote, pliant. He would have been helpful to whoever had power. Joseph Kraft said at the time that he was elected through a process whereby the great powers eliminated all candidates of merit, and the result is a man almost certain to bring the office of the Secretary General down to the low estate already reached by the Security Council and the General Assembly. And I would just point out to you that the U.S. ambassador to the United Nations at that time, one George Bush, declared Waldheim to be ideally equipped for the duties of this high office. Should also point out that the UN archives on war criminals have been closed since 1949. Okay, closed. Okay. Now, I suppose we have to ask why this would be so. Do you want to answer, Michael? And if you don't give the full story, I'll stand up and say the rest.
Winston Churchill once said of democracy, it's not a perfect system of government, it's the best we've got right now. You have any system of government and you work on improving it. And that's what organizations like the UNA, United Nations Association, are trying to do. And what Norma is saying is undeniable, it's indisputable, that the United Nations has not been a perfect organization, and in some respects it's been a very imperfect organization.
Why?
Because it all comes back again, I think, to this question of sovereignty and the refusal of the individual members, especially the more powerful members of the United Nations, the more militarily powerful, the more financially powerful members, to cede any of their sovereignty. And this has worked in some very strange ways. During the McCarthy era, there is clear evidence, you know, that the United States government put great pressure on the Secretariat to root out, especially American members of the Secretariat who had, or were thought to have, communist leanings.
Or socialist.
It's also a fact that the USSR, you know, for whatever reasons, until very recently, has not permitted its nationals to take a full part in the United Nations Civil Service, in the Secretariat. This is changing. Russians there, Soviet citizens, have been there only on loan. They have not been permanent members of the Secretariat. They have shuttled backwards and forwards between Moscow and New York or Geneva. There is currently in place a system of geographical quotas, which one hopes would go some way to meeting this on the level of the Secretariat, to make sure that there is a balance in the Secretariat from all countries. It's sort of like affirmative action, in the sense that first you look for competent people.
No, you don't. That's the trouble with the UN. They just look.
Your turn is coming soon. My turn now. The idea is, you know, that you examine. There are examinations for the civil service, And you find people who are competent to do the job, qualified professionals, and then you start apportioning for various factors. Where they come from, there is a mandate in place right now to make sure that there is balance between the sexes. The United Nations has fallen down on that quite considerably over the years. The women have been very poorly represented in the professional ranks.
Except as secretaries.
In the Let me come back again to the question of sovereignty, and let's compare it to the history of this country for a moment. You go back to the time of Confederacy. The government then in the 1770s, 1780s fell apart eventually because the individual states insisted on their sovereignty and came together in this country in a federal union, which itself was shaky for a number of years. It took a war, the Civil War, to establish principles of federalism, and before the war, in the 1830s, and I can't put an exact date on this, the Supreme Court handed down a decision on the relocation of the Cherokee Indians, and Chief Justice Marshall was on the court at the time, heading the court. The decision was that the federal government had no power to do what it had done, to order the Indians from the southern Appalachians relocated west. President Jackson in Washington said, let Mr. Marshall enforce his decree. He had no power to enforce it, and the forced migration took place. There were no federal marshals. Compare that, however, to what took place in 1956. When the court handed down its decision in Brown versus Board of Education. And at that point, the federal government had the political will to enforce it. And in 1956, you heard the same cry going up, states' rights. It's analogous, I think, to what you have in the United Nations, and it's a situation that we have to work past and through, this question of sovereignty. As long as each individual state, large or small, insists on preserving its own sovereignty, we're going to have some trouble. But I'm confident that it is something that, you know, with work, with a little idealism, we can work through.
I think we've left out an argument to Norma, which is history is what is past. You know, we have to work with what we have today. We're not the inheritors of the guilt of our country, of our forebears. We are citizens living today. And it would be unfair to keep Germany out because of their transgressions in World War II, as it would be to keep us out because of our transgressions against Vietnam or something like that. I mean, it's history, and you have to see it as that and move forward from where you are.
My point, if I may just say, is that the great powers have ensured that the quality of secretaries general has declined since Dag Hammarskjöld.
Well, he was seen as a cautious civil servant when he was hired. They had no idea of the fervor inside this man.
He took them by surprise. In fact, had they known what his qualities were, they would have made sure that he did not become secretary general. Moreover, there is no merit civil service in the United Nations. That has been consistently undermined by the fact that the USSR would not allow its nationals to take part, and by the United States, which ensured that all kinds of excellent people, well-qualified people, were fired because of its communist hunting. So there is no merit civil service, and there is no good leadership, which leaves the powers of the present organization, I mean the people, the personnel it has to work with, are undermined from the very beginning. And then the United States says, see, it doesn't do anything. Let's keep our funding, because it's not doing anything, see? So maybe this is an opening for you to talk about the United States citizens' viewpoint on the United Nations at the present time.
Well, actually, things are changing. And in the last 2 years, there have been many changes in the United Nations that are encouraging pamphlets that I have that were written in 1985 are critical and discouraging. Information now is much more hopeful. For one thing, the Soviet Union was very upset over Dag Hammarskjöld's behavior in the Congo. He was killed in an airplane flight when he was still working on that very difficult situation. And they, for about two decades, they did not pay their dues to the United Nations. The amount each country is charged is based on a formula depending on its resources and population. But within the last year and a half, the Soviet Union has paid up all of its arrearages and are now currently paid. And Gorbachev has made a statement, and if you want to look at it to examine the sinister, in quotes, motive behind it, you can see that he realizes that the Soviet Union can no longer protect its interests in these various countries where it's had forces, and that it now looks to an international organization to try to be somewhat fair about these various situations, so it's to their advantage. The United States, as you know, refused to pay its share for several years because they said the UN was very wasteful of money and so on, but various reforms were made. For 2 years, the UN was very worried as to whether it could pay all of its staff members. But now the United States is paying nearly its full cess share, but they're withholding 20% depending on the report of reforms, and they're paying the amount owed for the past only over a period of 6 years because of three concerns Bush has. One is about the tax allocation. This is a complicated issue about how what taxes UN employees should pay in the United States since they work here. And another is because the UN plans to prepare the Law of the Sea Treaty to hope to get it ratified by many other countries, even though we're refusing at this point to ratify it. But I might, you might be interested to know that originally the United States was assessed 31% of the total cost of the UN budget because of its resources. And of course, this was after World War II when airplane that we're funding in this country. Actually, per capita, we pay less than West Germany and Canada. I see Rosemary nodding. she's well aware. And Australia and France pay nearly as much per capita as we do. So we're not unduly charged. Yes?
I think your remark point up something that's wrong with the reform that you mentioned before, the third item of which was in the reform that the vote should have to do with the amount of money that a country contributes. I mean, as long as the United States can be as wasteful as it is, with billions of dollars being spent on climate change and worse things, it still would have more power. And I think the people who, this group that you mentioned was working on reform, is either overlooking that or subliminally wanting to make sure that the United States still retains most of the voting power. I don't always want to start with this.
But isn't the point, though, to allow that flaw in favor of getting binding votes?
I don't know.
That's quite possible. And while I have your attention, I would like to invite you to a meeting of the United Nations Association this coming Wednesday evening at 7:30 at the CUNA International Building on Mineral Point. There's parking underneath the building if you enter from Rosa Road. And the former socialist mayor of Milwaukee Frank Seidler is going to be the speaker. He's been an enthusiastic United Nations supporter for years, and you undoubtedly will hear other information. I think you might enjoy it. Oh, thank you, Alice. But we're nearly running out of time. I just like to say that I do think that the fact that people continue to talk is really encouraging. And when you think of the diverse languages and cultures in the world, I don't think we can expect terrific change very quickly. When you think of the evolution in our country, that took time. But Norma, I'm sure you have something else to say.
I do one more. There seem to be a number of people who want to say something.
Yes. All right, so I'll wrap up.
I'd like to ask the panel this question.
Oh, Julie, thank you.
I thought I remembered, I think this was West Lyon.
Mm-hmm. It was. Yes, Les was very...
effectively been upstage. Why don't you put that on the podium where we can all look at it a little better? The question is this. I would like to believe that the United Nations is better now than when it was first created, just as the government of this country is better and more effective than when it was first created. You, the panel, how do you see this? Is the United Nations more effective now in securing its aims than it was in the first years, or less, or about the same?
My answer would be, there's always been potential, and I hope there always will be potential, because there are idealistic people like Pat. However, the realization of that potential, I don't think has ever occurred. Only in certain small areas where the big powers do not have their self-interest tied up is the United Nations free to act. Places like Cyprus, eliminating certain diseases through vaccinations. I mean, that kind of thing, where nobody has something to gain by somebody else's discomfort or somebody else's hostilities, there the United Nations is free to act. And I would say that one of the ways that I would see the United Nations gaining strength, and one of the ways that I would go about it, would be to say, let's have a group, people like us, identify what areas are not controversial, what areas can we in fact effectively work together on, and then have the United Nations work on that and do a good job. You know, have a merit system, and for instance, combating AIDS would be one way, as in combating some other diseases. Possibly, promoting standardization. You know, the one large nation in the world that doesn't use the metric system is the United States.
Yes.
Nobody else cares. They're getting along fine without us on that one.
I just like to say one thing. My friend back here, whose first name is Susan, I can't think of your last name, mentioned that the Red Cross was an NGO member on consultative status to the Economic and Social Council. Actually, there are over 200 organizations, both national and international, that have NGO status or non-governmental organization, and they are becoming stronger all of the time. Actually, a Unitarian, Vernon Nichols, is the secretary of their organization in the New York office. And they are now pushing for a world assembly of citizens rather than the General Assembly made up of diplomatic representatives. I don't know that this will happen very soon, but it shows that more and more people are concerned about representing the interests of the people of the world as a whole. And I think all of these steps even though they're very minor, at least are somewhat promising.
I think there's hope.
That wasn't the question.
Oh, I'm sorry. What was
the question?
The question
is, are things any better now?
Are things any better? Yes, I think things are better because there is hope. You know, if this were a hopeless situation, you know, things would be worse. But, you know, we're still talking about the United Nations. People are not just in this room, but all over. We haven't given up on it. There is, as Pat mentioned, there is a 14-point program for UN reform. I'm encouraged by what's going on in Europe. You see, Europe now, with all of the history, the hundreds of years of conflict between various European nations, slowly working its way, Western Europe at least, and there is talk now that Hungary wants to join Common Europe, and this is going to open up into something where the barriers of sovereignty do fall. I think if the Brits can ever get rid of Maggie Thatcher, who calls it nonsense in her favorite word.
Yes, I have to ask my question. I'm going to survey on the education of the UN, and I think the strangeness, the ignorance about the UN, I'm so glad to be here for people who don't. There are lots of wrong forms. There are loads of criticisms. But the UN is developing, and just what you were talking about, I don't know your name either.
That's all right.
About working together. Now, I work with Ms. Swinburne on the United Nations Environment Program. And they've done all of these things. The United States takes so much credit for the World Environment and the things they've ignored it. UNEP has gone ahead for years with all kinds of things. UNESCO and UNICEF worked on environment in the early 60s. I worked with a big nation association and then the Commission to Study the Organization of Peace. And the thing that concerns me now, this is why I want to say my little piece about going too far, the curriculum about the UN, how many of you know about the UN through your school curriculum? I mean, you really know what you have a general intelligence. Well, how many, I'm curious to know. I just moved here from New York State, which pioneered an education about the UN. They had an in-service course for teachers that were developed over 15 years, and it was developed by the UN Education Department, the UNA, the school committee, the UNA, or the AUN, which it was at that time in the 40s and 50s, and the New York City Bureau of Curriculum Research. So at that time, the syllabus went out all over the world, people were intelligent. Now, I think this is important, because I think what the UNA should do here, what the UNA is doing in New York, and other around the country, is developing curriculum.
Thank you.
There's an article in the New York Times this morning that points out that American news gathering organizations have essentially stopped sending correspondence to the UN. And as a result, the UN doesn't get credit for some of its real accomplishments. For example, the nations of the world agreed to cut back on the production of chlorofluorocarbons to protect the ozone layer. That was a UN accomplishment, but the UN didn't get credit for it.
And also, the countries have agreed, and the UN is the U.S. is expected to sign shortly, regarding prohibiting the transportation of hazardous wastes around the world. So there are other steps. We're nearly.
Your representative of the UN, the UN office at the UN has always been the UN office, has always been one of the best NGOs for years.
Rosemary.
Yeah, that's one very tricky and sensitive area that has been absent in the discussion. Maybe Norma can say something about it. And that is the fact that the oppression or brutality and so forth towards third world women in certain areas have not been dealt with at all. And there have been numerous attempts by feminist or women's groups of third world countries, it's always very important to African nations that the Africans themselves do, have been attempts made towards their government to change, for instance, this matter of clitoral circumcision and the Indian thing with the burning and murder of widows or wives and so forth. And that sort of thing has run into a stone wall by the almost exclusively male-run heads of nations. And there we run into a matter not of sovereignty of nations, but of cultural or traditional sovereignty. In other words, some of the African governments insist upon certain practices being old traditions. Well, I've talked in Germany with a number of third world women who are active, who are saying, well, just because something is tradition, that doesn't necessarily mean it's good. You know, we have a lot of bad traditions. But that is one area where the UN or UNESCO, I don't know who would really be the group, has absolutely made almost no headway at all. And do you have any
yes. I've got a quotation that Alexander Solzhenitsyn. I don't speak Russian. Made in 1970, and I think that it speaks to several of the different points that were made here, including yours. He said, it's not a United Nations organization, but a United Governments organization. It doesn't represent people, it represents the governments. And the governments in most countries are male-dominated. And I think that's the reason why there was absolutely no place for women other than as secretaries in the United Nations until very recently they'd begun to pay a little bit of lip service to the feminist ideas. And I think that that's probably one reason why the human rights aspect of what the United Nations could do has been ignored. Because it's governments that are repressing the radicals or the reformers or whatever. And before you get rid of me...
I was going to make music.
A quotation from Dag Hammarskjöld, who was an idealist and who was probably the best Secretary General we have had as yet, and probably the best one we're going to get in quite a while until we change things. He said, the final, least tangible, but perhaps the most important new factor in diplomacy is mass public opinion as a living force in international affairs, the expression of a democratic mass civilization that is still in its infancy, giving to the working individual and to group reactions a new significance in foreign policy. In other words, when we have as much news dissemination in the United States about United States actions elsewhere as we get about what happens in Europe, and when other countries, the poorer countries of the world, get the kind of news that we get about other countries, then I think we'll have the possibility of mass opinion affecting what the governments do in the name of ordinary people. And I think we're a long way from that, but that's the only way it's going to happen.
Thank you. Time dictates that we must stop. I'm sorry. We'll sing song number 2 of the songbooks.
The first set of words, the ones inside the music. And when you get to the end of verse 4, those of us who are inclined may sing sorority at that point.
Shall we stand?
Thank you. Thank you, Pat, Norma, and Mike. It seems like we covered history, international politics, sovereignty, and even the faint glimmer of family politics. I've never seen Norma quite so imperious. Several things that we generally take up at this time: joys and sorrows, introduction, and announcement. Does anyone have something they would like to share with us? That, yes?
I need help from several people. I'm seeing these shirts, and that's a joy to me. And I want to just see them all. Can we get a parade or something?
Maybe stand up and turn around.
Yeah.
Tell people where they came from.
Oh, I didn't do it.
Pretty good.
Up the woods workshop.
All right. These shirts, Mary Ann Frederica.
Yes.
Really, the shirts are the courtesy of Mary Ann Frederica, because they're the ones who had the idea and did a tremendous amount of work.
They did.
In preparing the dyes and getting everything else ready that those of us who wanted to play could play.
I have my camera here, and I'd like everybody to meet at 11:20 in the
park. Well, that was certainly a joy, that's for certain. Did you notice how many children have the tie-dyes on? What? Anybody else? Ann?
I guess it's kind of mixed, the San Francisco earthquake recently had obviously a tremendous amount of destruction and loss of life, and that is a sorrow, but I was very pleased to find out that the people on Lee's side of the family who live out there, who were numerous apparently, who are all safe and sound, although my brother-in-law, who was somewhere in the vicinity of Watsonville, he said every article in his house was broken, but he's okay. He's living in a tent right now outside of the apartment building, but he's okay. I guess it's a joy. Wednesday night I had an interesting experience. We went down to WHA TV studios for taping to be in the audience of the taping of the What Do You Know radio show, which is being done as a pilot for the Disney Channel. And in the second taping, I got selected out of the audience to play the quiz, and we won. So. Let me know, it's going to say also featuring a tour of Mount Horror, Wisconsin, so look for that. Somebody can let me know so I can at least see my story.
Any more? Rachel.
I just wanted to say that I have a daughter who lives north of Santa Cruz, Mill Valley, and I was so relieved to hear she had a very narrow escape, because she goes to school in Oakland every day, and she was headed toward the Oakland Bridge when she saw chunks of concrete falling down, and she was 880, and she was running parallel to it, decided she'd turn around and go back to school.
Jack, I have one.
Any more?
Yeah. Michael alluded last weekend at Upham Woods to the fact that we're moving. We lived in our same house for 21 years, and it's both a joy and a sorrow to change. We're going to move to 2404 Fox Avenue, for those of you that may or may not need to know, a smaller house. And we've certain things that we really will not need anymore. And if anybody is thinking, for instance, to buy furniture, do speak to us in 10 minutes after the service today. And in particular, we have two beautiful children's dollhouses. So if any of you have daughters and would like to spend a smaller sum of money.
Sounds very modern.
Family politics rears its ugly head.
Well, they're certainly inter-family and everything.
They don't want them.
They don't want them.
They told me they didn't have room for them. We have two identical ones and one play school without a lid. So, I mean, anybody who cares about children and would like their children to have such might wish to look at them.
Any more? Julie?
We have a daughter in Minneapolis going to school up there. My joy is that she got a job. And this makes me unbearably glad because I'm, you know, it reduces the amount of money I'm having to send north every month. I could not believe she held out and she found a terrific job grocery shopping.
I can believe she goes over every school.
It's a service that buys, you know, groceries for people to take them to their home and everything. So every day after school, she goes over and gets a list and goes to the grocery store and buys groceries for $6 an hour. I think it's a terrific job.
Any announcements?
As a lot of you may know, my son Todd was diagnosed about a year and a half ago. And I'm a member of JDF, the Juvenile Diabetes Foundation, and I'm somewhat active in that organization. And finding a cure for diabetes is really close to my heart, and I'd like to draw attention to a couple pages of a newsletter which I've just become editor of, on the bulletin board over there. And one, there's a couple. There's three things I'd like to put that thing up there. Todd has a comic strip on diabetes up there. And he's also featured in the newsletter, as other kids will be coming newsletters. And for all of you who are thinking of buying toys for Christmas, I'm going to be holding a fundraiser, a Discovery Toys fundraiser for the Juvenile Diabetes Foundation in my home Saturday, 11 and 4 p.m. The information is there, but I also have information with me here for a number of you with children, and if anybody else is interested, please let me know. The address is up here also.
Any other? Anne?
The phone call that happened during the
service.
That happened out of county for the service. I don't want to say that word. I don't know.
Meeting.
it was a fellow from Eau Claire. His name is Tim Lane, and he has a friend here who is a Vietnamese student. He's a Vietnamese graduate student in electrical engineering who is a political refugee from Vietnam, and he just found out recently that his mother and two sisters were murdered by and he's not reaching out for help, and Tim can get down here for a week or so. He's wondering if anyone who might have connections with the Buddhist temple in town could reach out to this person, or you know, he thought he had ministers here and like feels ministerial along those lines, or just could contact him with some ideas of other people or organizations that he could contact to help this particular fellow. If anyone is inspired on the line, see me, and I have the phone numbers that you can work from.
Suggest you contact Rod Stevenson.
Yeah.
Why don't you give him the information?
Okay, great.
He's not here today, but he'll be back tonight.
Good. After the service, this morning, there's going to be
meeting.
A meeting. in this building here. There's going to be a parent-teacher coffee for parents of third, fourth, and fifth graders, and this will be downstairs after we all get down there.
And the kids will go with them in the park.
Oh, great.
Oh, okay.
I'm taking a semi-independent action on behalf of the Social Action Committee. I think we should pass the hat to the Red Cross because they've been hit pretty hard. I'm passing the hat to the White
Elephant.
Madison West High School Play this year is Harvey. And I'm in it, and Rebecca Dunn is directing it. And it's going to be November 2nd, 3rd, and 4th. They should all come.
Hey.
Everyone else, we're passing. We have a
for cleanup, coffee cleanup after the service. So I would like people to please be kind-hearted and realize that we have to have workers around here and sign up for some.
You have only one volunteer for today. So
yes, we need a second volunteer for today. And then today is it. This is your absolute last chance to sign up for Circle Dinner. And for people who may have been hesitant before, I can tell you for a fact there will be at least one and possibly more Circle Dinners with children. So if anybody had children who may be concerned, there wouldn't be some circles where children would be welcome. We will have circles, at least one and possibly two circles with children. So.
Okay.
I'm sorry, I don't plan to see Harvey the night of Saturday, November 4th. Because that's the evening that we're going to have our special auction here to raise money for Prairie Finances. And we'll be auctioning off really nice objects that could serve as Christmas gifts and so on. There will be a door prize, a beautiful plant. There will be a special fortune teller, Eloise, and astrologer. And bring your friends, tell your friends about it. And there will be food available if you want to come at 6. Otherwise, come 6:45 or 7 to view the goodies. And we will start early because it's likely to be a long evening.
Oh, well, I just believe it. If we have some things we want to auction off.
The program next Sunday is titled The Devil is the Spirit of Gravity. All things fall. The title comes from Friedrich Nietzsche. I'll also try to bring in Salman Rushdie's Satanic Verses. And I will reserve part of the program for your religious jokes. So bring along.
King?
Judy and I have agreed to take responsibility for recording the program. Wait, clap with one hand. We're only going to do it half the time. I'm going to do it on even-numbered Sunday, so we need someone else to do it. It will not be done next week unless somebody else volunteers. We decided we can do that much. So if you want, it's very simple, as Pat Miller described, and she's organizing very well. Everything is in a trunk over here, written instructions. You just need to be here 5 minutes early to set things up. So please, somebody see us and we'll give you the details.
Is there any volunteer to do that for next Sunday?
Okay, Susan.
Okay, Susan. Thank you. Dick.
Hey, look at Susan, too.
Yeah.
Take a look at Susan. She's had her hand up for an hour.
Yeah, let me do my announcement. I have an opportunity to buy some movie passes, and I see I bought too many for me to use. If people were willing to buy them, we're willing to donate the money to Perry. Oh. They're $3 a piece. They're good until the 1st of December.
For where?
Various theaters. I bought a movie listing along. If anybody wants to look and see this.
Jack, I I found a sum of paper money out here next to the sidewalk. So if somebody's lost a small amount of paper money, if you have lost some, see me.
I'll bet it's a $10 bill.
Dick?
Afraid I can't match last time. Inspiration doesn't strike always. It is Prairie Fire deadline. Please give me what you have. Committee chair, if you want to be in the next monthly calendar, I have to have your meeting dates, times, and locations today. Please.
We can still put it in the regular calendar.
Oh, yeah. If you want it in a month at a time calendar.
Very briefly, did anybody bring lost and found back from up in the woods that I lost the game? Scruples.
Rachel's lost her scruples.
Let me the regular board meet tomorrow night, 7:30 here. Tomorrow night. Cindy?
I want to announce our change during donuts.
All right.
Intercom.
Number 71.
Thank you.
Oh, yes, yeah.
We're saying it.
Yes.
It's late. Cancel us off.
Go, go, go!
Yes.
Yes.
That's all.